Join the conversation at radioaustralia.net.au.
Losing your vision would be, for most of us, something we could never imagine. But for the person that we've got in the studio with us now, becoming blind, losing her sight, was no reason to stop experiencing everything that life had to offer. Maribel Steele lost her vision, or she started losing her vision when she was 15. She's gone on to accomplish so much. She's travelled, she's written a recipe book, and she gives inspirational talks. She talks about mastering blindness. Maribel is in the studio with us now. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Phil.
We actually met on Facebook. Was it Facebook or LinkedIn?
LinkedIn
it was, you know.
Yes.
And your story just sounded so fantastic.
Thank you. I was pretty thrilled.
Now, let's go back to when you were 15. You had perfect vision up to 15?
More or less. My parents discovered that I had a bit of a sight problem reading the blackboard. So they took me to the optometrist who prescribed glasses. And that didn't seem to be much of a problem, except it was for me as a 13-year-old because I didn't want to be different. And none of the girls in my class wore glasses. And so that was the beginning of this feeling that, there's a change ahead and I don't know what it is and I don't like it.
I
felt that I'm starting to be different. And as a 13-year-old, I certainly didn't want to stand out from my peers. But it just seemed, well, look, no problem, just wear the glasses, you'll be fine. But then over a couple of years, eyesight really dropped off. And that was a bit of a worry. So my parents then sought the advice of 17 ophthalmologists, had me put into hospital for tests, and over a two-week period they discovered that it wasn't short-sightedness, it was actually an eye condition.
And the eye condition was?
And they just diagnosed me with having retinitis pigmentosa, which is called RP for short. And basically it's a degenerative disease.
Yeah.
Where you will basically at some point lose all your vision.
And there's nothing they could do about it.
There's nothing they can do about it. There's no cure. Although, I mean, this is in the 70s. They're doing fantastic research now in, you know, bionic eyes, restoring retinal cells. So there is actually light now showing at the end of the tunnel. Not that there is a cure, but there's certainly with technology and all our advancements, there could be something to help in the next 5 to 10 years.
So you might be able to see fully again?
I may, and I must tell you that my parent and my children have said, "Mum, that's a worry. You driving?" Oh, no, I don't think so.
So at the moment, as we were sitting you down in the studio here, you and I were talking, and you said that you can see out because we have a big window in the side of our studio, so you can look out over parts of Melbourne here, and you said you can actually see, you know that there is light there, you know there's a window there.
Yeah, so I can tell I have a little bit of vision, and the more sunlight there is, the better I can see, but I still don't see detail. I don't have depth perception. I can't tell on the pavement if there's a step or how deep the step is. I can't see people's faces, so I don't get the detail. So I know there's things out there, and I describe it like if you were looking out through a foggy windscreen 24 hours a day. Oh. That sort of, it yeah. never clears. Never gets better.
You know what? Being 15 years old, many people would say it sucks. It's hard enough. You've got hormones. Your feeling of self-worth is quite often, it moves around up and down, quite often down. What about for you as a 15-year-old knowing that you now were going to have this incredible problem?
Well, I think at the time I do remember thinking, I'm not going to let it beat me. There's no way. I couldn't see myself as being a blind person. Mm. This word, you know, having this label of disability placed onto me as a 15-year-old and then 17-year-old and then trying to carve a career and, you know, carrying around a label that people want to say, well, you're disabled. I just found it didn't feel like me. It was like you were talking about someone else. And so I always had this attitude that I would just find my way around, you know, set my goals. Just you have to find different ways of doing them.
There must have been some terrible times for you, though, with this, where it must have got you down.
It did get me down in that in the 70s where we didn't have what we have now and the technology and all the things that we can help people in studies. And, like, for instance, at the moment I use computer programming, which is software for the blind, and it's called JAWS. And it does all my writing, all my work in terms of it's a screen reading program. So as I type, there's no mouse. It just tells me everything I'm doing. So it's an audio program. That wasn't available in the 70s. So it was basically learn Braille or, you know, audiobooks. But what really got me down was there didn't seem to be a career that I could turn to. Like teaching was out, being a nurse was out, doing secretarial was out. And I just remember feeling, oh, my God, all the doors are closing.
Yeah.
It's like, what on earth am I going to do? So I thought, oh, well, I'll just become the next Olivia Newton-John, you know.
Can you sing?
Yes.
You can sing as well as do everything else, huh?
Yeah, well, I harmonise, yeah. And I loved singing, and I found my refuge in music. So that was my first passion, in being able to go to my room and get away from everything and just put my records on and just sing. So that was a huge benefit in being able to just, you know, cope with what was going on and this feeling of I'm different and it's all coming down on me, but I'm not going to let it beat me.
Mm. What about boys? What about relationship, doing the things that the other kids were doing?
Yeah, I guess that was limited. I did go out to discos and come back and tell my parents all about it. And, yeah. You know, they were sort of horrified.
Oh, good. So you horrified your parents. That's a good
thing. A little
thing.
Bit, yeah.
Good.
Yes, I wasn't going to stop doing those things. And my girlfriends would take me shopping and my girlfriends would help me, you know,
and they were supportive,
choose clothes.
Obviously.
And, yeah. And when I was single, we'd go out and, you know, when you're vision impaired or blind, you just do things differently, yeah. And you help the sighted people learn. They have to adapt to the ways that you need. And for instance, if we were out, my girlfriends would whisper in my ear, you know, if someone's come up to talk to me, a fellow, they'd whisper a number between, you know, 5 and 10. So like if they thought, yep, he looks okay, they'd go 8. Yeah. Well, they go,
so they'd give you a clue on whether this guy was hot or not.
Turn away.
What you just mentioned then, helping sighted people, I have heard it said by people who are vision impaired who say that people who can see actually see less than we do because we hear and we smell and we know, we actually have more of a sense of our environment.
Oh, you, in terms of what, the blind people?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Because it just comes at you from all your body, like the world that you navigate through. Everything's coming at you. Like even while I'm sitting here, I'm really aware of this whole environment in this room, where the sound is coming from. You know, just it's like my every little fiber on my skin is like a little radar.
And, as you said that, I could just feel the breeze that is coming from the air conditioner that I'd never noticed before. You know, that's right.
So the moment you close your eyes, then everything else heightens. And that's what I've been able to, work on in terms of I rely on my hearing, I rely on touch very much, and intuition. Intuition is a big part of how I function. So I have to trust my feelings.
Does it ever steer you wrong?
No.
It doesn't ever?
No. No, that's what's wonderful, and that's what I really have learned. And I think as a young girl growing up, that's where the challenge was. First of all, I had to accept what I had so I could work with it. Otherwise, it's like swimming in the ocean and you're just swimming against the waves and you're just going to tire yourself out and drown. And I learned that I was going to have to ride the wave and, just get around those obstacles. But I could use my sense of intuition.
Do you ever find a sense of anguish or frustration that people who can see that have nothing physically wrong at all don't take advantage of it? That, you know, people will go out, as we're hearing about the king hitting at nightclubs, people punching each other, getting frustrated, people who have the privilege of driving cars on roads have road rage, that people throw away all the joyful things that have been given to them?
I don't think I look at it that way. I think we all have challenges. And we all deal with something in our lives. Some are more obvious. So physical handicaps or disabilities are much more obvious. But, you know, we do all have something. And I don't tend to be envious of other people that have eyesight, because what I've learned is that my vision impairment has actually shaped how I think and how I work now. And I have noticed that as I am as my own self, being just normal, getting around, I help sighted people suddenly become aware of oh, wow, okay, so she's got a white cane and she's catching the tram and, oh, okay. And they start to appreciate their lives by seeing a confident blind person doing their stuff. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of helping sighted people become more aware of their lives like that. So I don't need to envy, you know, how people are using their sight or not using their sight. Yeah.
You know what? You can quite often see, even though you have limited use of your eyes, you can usually, when you're interviewing people, one of the secrets of interviewing folks is that you look in people's eyes and you can see if people are being honest or if people are happy. I look in your eyes and I can see shining, bright, most beautiful eyes, probably one of the most beautiful eyes in the world, sets of eyes in the world.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so you got, but it's almost ironic that, of course, this is the one part of your body that is not functioning properly.
And that's what catches people, because before I started to use a white cane, as I found that very hard to accept that's, as soon as you pick up a cane, it's not as easy as you think, because you know people are going to start judging you and you sort of feel that they'll start thinking, well, that you're not capable and look at that poor person. You don't want to pick up a cane and get people's sympathy. Empathy is fine, but sympathy is a different thing. And sorry, I've lost my train of thought.
That's all right. Yeah.
But about the eyes. No, that's a tricky thing. So I would look at people and say, excuse me, I'm blind. Can you help me? And, of course, they'd look straight into my eyes and go, hello, you're what? And that has sometimes not worked, you know, for me, because in my advantage, be having clear blue eyes. But, you know, I'm glad that people have got something to nice to look at, and I just have to, you know, smile back. That's all I can do.
Put up with the fact that people love looking at you. Yeah, that's a Maribel Steele, you have also written books. My Mother's Harvest is a collection of family recipes and short stories as well that you put out. You know, I know so many people who say, I want to write, but it's so hard. Now, I've written, you've written, and it isn't easy necessarily, but you do it. And in your situation, was it extra hard to actually do this, to get this thing done?
Well, what I must say is that I have good team. I have a lot of help and support. So in my family, my friends, you know, if I want to do something and it's very visual, like producing a book, obviously I need the help of other people, other sighted people. So I had my stories in my files, you know, like I said before, the computer, I do my writing with my audio program. All the thinking part of it I do by myself. But then when it comes to, you know, the proofreading or the editing, then I give it to my dad, who's a writer, and he goes through it, he corrects grammar, he picks up, you know, whatever it is you do in proofreading. Mm-hmm. And then I have my partner, Harry, who is technologically savvy, so he does all my, you know, making sure that if I'm posting something like on my blog, it's all correct. So you need teamwork. Any work, even writing a book as a sighted person, you end up being, it's a collaborative work. Yeah. But the writing, yes, is a solo affair. And I love it. I love being able to just go into my head and start writing, find a quiet place, and just produce these stories. But yeah, ultimately, I do have help in making sure that they look okay when it comes to publication.
And I've got to say, Harry helped you in here as well and sat you down and then, you know, was saying, don't be too close to the microphone. And then in the end, you just sent him out of the room and said, I can take it from here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Harry, obviously this is part of your life as well. So
he's very sweet.
He's looking
sweet.
Up at me going, yep, it is.
And I must say, so that's the thing. When you're living with someone who's blind or vision impaired, there's a very fine line between helping them and letting them do what they can do. Because obviously we need assistance, but everything that is we're able to do on our own in that sense of independence, we need to be able to do.
So for people who are listening across the region, you said as we walked in that you'd read my blog, my blog that's on my books page.
Loved it.
And how did you read it?
With my JAWS program. So, and I was wondering whether to bring that in, you know, because I thought I would love to have played it for you, but I wasn't sure how much time we had. So
that would have been fun, but anyway,
yes,
next time.
Okay, next time. A reason to get me in next time. So. And JAWS, it's called Job Access with Speech. It's a screen reading program, and it's quite in the beginning days, it's quite hard to learn because you don't use a mouse and you have to learn all these special key commands. And, of course, you get confused, which is this, which is that, and you're not seeing the screen. You don't know what's going on. So this voice is jumping around with you. So it'll say start menu, leaving menu, email, receive messages, da-da-da-da. So it's telling you everything that's going on the screen. So when I went into your blog and Googled for your recent book, it took me to your site, and then I started just let the computer read in his robotic voice your blog, which I found fascinating.
Thank you, Maribel.
Because that's why I write stories. I love this thing of sharing our stories, and I do want to say that I believe that everyone has a story. What saddens me is that people don't think they have a story worth telling. And I really believe that we all have a story worth telling.
Absolutely. Mm. I agree with you too. Mm. And I thought if I hadn't written about my grandmother, that story would have died.
Mm, exactly.
Like the story of her parents died and the parents before them. We don't know what many of our parents and great our ancestors did. Very sad indeed. Maribel Steele and your book, My Mother's Harvest. And, it's just one of the many things you've done. We appreciate you coming in. It's been glorious speaking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you.
Radio Australia, on air and online at radioaustralia.net.au.